Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Jay Ahern, Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Also joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel, Director of Homeland Securities at IBM. Jay, what trends will have the largest impact on CBP field operations, say, over the next 10 years, and how will CBP need to adapt these changes? And if I may, not to put you on the spot, but what advice would you give to the next administration in facing these challenges head on?
Well, to take the last point first, hopefully I'm still here when the next administration comes around being a career person. But I think, first off, the challenges they're going to be facing is certainly, I think, the threat of terror and the risk involved with that is not going to go away. It's very clear that there are still individuals out there that want to cause harm on this country. And as the border agency, we need to be prepared for that. So that's going to be the most significant thing we need to continue to focus on. And staying focused on that in the long term is a challenge, because certainly when we realize the threat that's out there, that we need to continue to reinforce to our frontline people every day and make sure we continue to refresh our strategies to meet the emerging and adaptive trends that are out there. But the trends that I see out there, you know, we still need to be taking a look at how do we continue to keep our twin pillars alive, you know, facilitation of legitimate travel and trade, and also maintaining the high level of security that's going to be brought about by the increase of travel and trade. I mean, we're seeing in the maritime environment container traffic growing by about 12 to 15% every year. We're seeing growth in the air passenger environment. So we need to continue to make sure we're able to stay current with not only the growth in travel, but also the accompanying risk that comes with that. And at the same time, making sure that we don't, you know, stumble and actually impact legitimate flow by over-securing. So those are going to be huge things for us. But I think to be adaptive, we need to make sure that we're flexible to any emerging threats. And I think being the border agency that we are and having the layered strategy, it's served us well for drug interdiction over the years. It served us exceptionally well over the last few years post 9/11 to be adaptive to any threat that's really posed through the movement of people or things into this country. So we need to stay current with those trends. But also, you know, just making sure that we're current with the emergence of technology. I mean, I will throw a challenge out there to the industry and that develops technology for us, both for non-intrusive inspection systems, targeting systems, things of that nature, container security devices. We need to make sure that these things are certainly effective, but not just effective in a laboratory or a sterile environment. Think of our operational environment when companies are looking to develop systems or technology. Dealing with the type of throughput and capacity we deal with every day, you know, that over 400 million people equates to over a million people a day coming into this country. So we need to make sure the throughput and capacity is always realized. Environmental conditions, both sides of our borders, northern, southern, those are a big issue. So it's not a one-size-fits-all for how we figure our strategy out and also for companies that are out there to provide assistance with targeting and also development of technology and systems for us. It's critical that there's a good understanding and marriage between the operators and also the providers of technology.
And we all certainly have a vested interest in that.
Absolutely.
The war on terror isn't just impacting the priorities of the organizations within Homeland Security. It's also affecting the budget. Throughout the federal government, the war on terror continues to impact the budget. What are some of the things that you're able to do in CBP in the coming years to maintain the effectiveness and the efficiency of the organization with the resources needing to be applied towards things like development of new technology?
Well, I think when you take a look at, you know, the budget and the priorities of Homeland Security, one of the things I haven't, you know, talked about today is one of the things that plagues us today is not having secure documents for everybody coming into this country. Now, the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, which was brought about as a recommendation of the 9/11 Commission and the Intelligence Reform and Terrorist Prevention Act, required it that people coming into this country must have a bona fide document that's secure, that adjudicates citizenship. January 23rd of this year, we went in with the full requirement that everybody coming into this country by air from the Western Hemisphere and worldwide must present a passport. And prior to that, and a lot of people and the listeners may be surprised saying, you mean I didn't have to have a passport? Well, from some parts of the Western Hemisphere, you didn't. But now that is a requirement. Next year in 08, we're going to have the requirement on the land side that it'll have to be a passport or an equivalent document. And we're working with State Department and other governments on what that equivalent document will be, but it has to be something that is machine readable, something that has security features in there, but also something that, you know, obviously shows identity with high levels of security and confidence in the identity, but also adjudicates citizenship. And that's going to be huge for us, making sure that we can provide a higher level of security, because over 8,000 different types of documents are acceptable for entry into this country today. You think of all the different types of birth certificates you get from a hospital or a state or a town or city vital statistics. I mean, those are all the different types of documents that people could present, as well as driver's license, and those can be easily fraudulently obtained or created. So we need to make sure as we think about that going forward. But that's going to be a huge budget drain for us going forward. And to have the right technology put into our process on the physical land borders is going to be a challenge. And certainly another aspect of our budget is heavily focused on the Secure Border Initiative on Southwest border initially, but also then moving to the northern border and the coastal communities next to provide security of the borders.
We spent a lot of time talking about technology. I want to focus a little bit inward to the organization. And we talk a lot about with our guests about the pending retirement wave within government. How are you handling this this retirement wave, and what is your organization doing to ensure that it has the right mix of people as you meet these challenges?
You know, there is a point in time when a lot of agencies face it, and we've been facing it for the last couple of years. We've actually had some success with convincing some people not to retire or actually rehiring some of our renewants to stay and come back in after short periods of retirement. That's worked well. But we also need to take a look at how do you develop and plan and mentor people for succession planning. And we've got some programs in place that we're actually, you know, carrying out to bring people into our headquarters environments with incentive programs that offer training, leadership training, mentoring, as well as some executive education at some of the notable universities around the country to make sure that they're ready to succeed us when people like me and others depart. But it's a challenge. I think it's not unique only to the government. I think it certainly happens in the private sector as well, that you do have turnover, and sometimes you get into cycles, and you need to have a very deep bench strength, if you will, for people to succeed those that pass and move into retirement after a number of years of government service. But turnover is also a very good thing. I mean, I've been now in this job for coming up 5 years, and I think there'll be an appropriate time in the future where somebody comes in and takes my job and should look at things through a fresh set of eyes and see how they can continue to improve upon what I've been able to accomplish and others that work with me. And I think that's a good thing. But we need to continue to bring in people with a broad range of experience. Law enforcement agencies like ours, we tend to look for people that have kind of grown up in the organization or worked the front lines. And that's good to a point. But I think we also need to complement that with a lot of people with private sector experience, other government agency experience, so that we have a full view of actually what's going on in our environment, not just through the view of the people that solely work the front line, although that's critical. We need to balance that. So we're looking at alternative ways to bring others in as well.
You mentioned the need to be able to bring new folks in and to continue to backfill the pipeline of qualified folks. In fact, at the end of our last segment, you talked quite a bit about the fact that the success of the organization is predominantly dependent upon the quality of the people. I'd like, if you could, for you to expand a little bit. You talked about some of the training things that you're doing with new folks. Is CBP recruiting? Are you bringing in new folks? And what type of programs do you have to be able to attract the talent that's necessary to keep the high quality of individuals you currently have in the organization?
We are aggressively recruiting, and certainly not only within our frontline officer ranks, but also in the Border Patrol. I mean, the president's actually thrown a challenge to the, or actually more than a challenge, a requirement to CBP to actually increase the size of the Border Patrol and double it during the time of his administration, which is going to require about 6,000 more Border Patrol agents over the next couple of years. So we're in the midst of a hiring initiative there, but also our frontline officers. We just had an announcement open, and we had 33,000 people that responded to the announcement, which is considerable. So we're having an adequate pipeline, and then they have to go through the rigor of the testing, the medical, the background, the drug screening, and everything that goes with the pre-employment process. But we're also trying to streamline that because we know we're competing against other agencies and also private sector companies for talented young individuals coming into the organization. So we need to compress and streamline that process. And we're doing a lot of compression hiring at certain locations around the country to bring people on board. There's incentives for high-cost locations. We're also trying to be a thoughtful employer and looking for what do we have for advancement opportunities. And I would tell you, then, and certainly any of the listeners, it's an exciting organization. Being part of DHS today and specifically within CBP is an exciting time. You know, the public service that we do is a very notable profession, and it's a critical mission that we do. But not only the opportunity to work in one of our many locations around the country, but the overseas capabilities and the international affairs that we do, I think it just provides limitless opportunities for people who want to come into the organization now or in the future.
Jay, 30-plus years, very, very successful career. I'm curious. So what advice could you give to somebody who's sort of on that brink thinking about a career in public service?
I think certainly begin with taking that jump. Go into public service. And as I stated, it's a very notable profession. And particularly today, I've seen so many people over the last few years, particularly after 9/11, that wanted to be part of the solution and come into government and try to protect the homeland. So I think that certainly is have the will and the desire to come in. And there's often a lot of, you know, criticisms or jokes to some degree of the federal civil servant population. I don't see that at all. I think that certainly the people of our organization are dedicated, hardworking individuals, and we need more people like that. But certainly coming in, one of the things I always look at when I go down to speak to our graduating classes down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, you bring your education, you bring your experience onto the job, you bring whatever was in your upbringing, and then we provide a high level of training. But beyond that, then it becomes the individual's responsibility. It's what you want to then make of a career. You got to be positive. You got to be professional. You've got to have a good work ethic. And you have to take advantage of the opportunities that are out there to you and not wait for them to come to you. So I encourage anybody that gets into the organization to go ahead and just continue to advance, be mobile, take the opportunities, take some risk, take some jobs that you think you may not be ready for. And it's amazing how quickly you might adapt to some of these challenges. But I think it's a great opportunity for people that want to come in and be part of a very significant and meaningful organization.
That's fantastic advice. We've unfortunately reached the end of our hour. I want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Dave and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country over the past 30 years.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you both very much.
Great. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Jay Ahern, Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who can't hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.